with Armand DeMille.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Hey. Today we're going to talk about your relationships. Specific tools to improve your relationships. And when we're finished today, perhaps you can have a better time talking to your mate, or your best friend, or your children, and maybe even get more of what you need. Think about it, friends. At the onset of a relationship, when you commit to someone, there's almost always a hidden set of unresolved problems that are just kind of sitting in there, differences that the two of you have. People are different. And although love makes these differences seem small, when the honeymoon is over, these very differences take a bigger meaning. Do you know what I mean? The conflict is inevitable. When you have two totally different human beings coming together, you're going to have two totally different attitudes, approaches. They're not going to be maybe totally different, but they're going to be in there. You're going to have different feelings. For example, different needs. Like one of you likes quiet, and the other one likes to party. There can be differences in activity levels, differences in sensual needs, differences in talkativeness, intellect, social, ethical, religious differences as well. All these things could come up, but they don't come up right away. First, you know, love, friendship, being connected helps you overlook all those differences because it's so wonderful to feel connected to someone. But everybody brings to a relationship some overlap where these differences are crossed, where they do not meet, and if you've chosen someone else, you've chosen someone who's got a latent set of unresolved differences. Can we agree on that? That's fairly easy. And it's not that you pick someone with whom there is no problem. These problems or differences may never get resolved, but somehow the lack of resolution does not itself lead to the end of a relationship. It's just that you've got to be able to handle these things when they come up. You don't have to separate over differences unless you don't handle differences well, unless you're really intent on trying to get away from the other person. Then you pick up the small differences like you like square fingernails and I like pointed fingernails. And you make this a big issue, and you say we had to break up because she kept getting those square fingernails, and I hate square fingernails. It's how the differences are dealt with that determines how the relationship will survive over the next few days, few weeks, few months, few years, forever. People who survive the conflicts. In fact, the way you settle your differences very often develops a deeper sense of loving and safety. The second stage of every relationship is seeing, acknowledging, and handling differences, and when done well, the love grows deeper. When done badly, the love starts getting lost. So the focus of our work is going to be on how to handle your differences, and I want you to think about the way you handle your differences. I've thought of some ideas around how people handle their differences and what happens when you handle them badly. And what I want to address for the next few days is the different ways that people handle differences badly. What they do that starts the process of destruction of a relationship. And maybe if you catch it early on, you can kind of make things better before they get worse. Do you know what I mean? I like to call these the four horsemen of the apocalyptic relationship. You know what I mean by an apocalyptic relationship? A relationship that's doomed he could just see, you know, one step after another, and then there are these signs, and I call these signs the four horsemen of the apocalyptic relationship. But before we go there, do any of you know what the four horsemen of the apocalypse are? What do you think they are? You know? Everybody, we did a survey around here, and everybody's impression was it was death, pestilence, famine, drought. Really, according to the research project of Derek and Love, the four horsemen of the apocalypse were described in 8 verses of the book of Revelation. These come from the Apostle John when he talked about opening the 7 seals, the scroll, and Jesus, who is called the Lamb, is opening these seals, and when you open the seal, you see what's inside, and here it is. The first seal is opened, and a white horse appears. And the white horse, its rider held a bow like in a bow and arrow. And it had this voice of thunder that called out this white horse, and this horse comes out and was given a crown, and it rode out as a conqueror. And the first horse is conquest. Now get that. The need to conquer. The first horseman of the apocalypse. The first destruction. Conquest. Interesting, huh? The second seal is opened, and a red horse appears. And its rider holds a sword. And this is war. And it's the second one, the second horse comes out, it's given the power to take peace from the earth and make men slay each other. To create discord. This is the second horse of the apocalypse. So if we were going to have a destructive forces on the planet, we would have the need to conquer, and secondary, the waging of war. Beginning to sound familiar to you, by the way? Right? The third seal is opened, and a black horse appears, and this black horse holds a pair of scales which represent famine. Anything that creates the inability for people to sustain themselves by starving them in one form or another. And the fourth horse is the famous horse, the pale horse, which represents death. And when you think of how the death would appear, the death could appear by sword, by famine, by plague, or by the wild beasts of the earth being leashed upon the people. These are the four horsemen of the apocalypse. You didn't know that, did you? Just kind of interesting, isn't it? Almost relates to what we're talking about, but I like it. I like the words anyway. Listen, here's what I'm talking about. Here are my four horsemen. The four horses of the apocalyptic relationship. Get ready for these words. Criticism. That's the first horse. That's like the first one you open, the need for conquest. Criticism. The second one, contempt. The third is defensiveness, and the fourth is stonewalling. I'm going to teach you about these four things because you're probably all involved in it in one form or another. When these horsemen ride, one leads into the other. It starts off with something small. It will start off with criticism, and it will eventually wind up with stonewalling, which is where you two aren't even talking to each other anymore, and you don't even regard each other as a human anymore, and it's the end of a relationship. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about what I consider to be the four horsemen of the apocalyptic relationship, the first one being criticism, the second one contempt, the third is defensiveness, and the fourth one is stonewalling. Look over at somebody who you're in a relationship with right now, or think about somebody you're in a relationship now. Do they stonewall you? Do you stonewall them? Are you defensive with them? Are they defensive with you? You might have a little of that. How about contempt? Is there a contempt between the two of you? How about criticism? Is there criticism? Criticism leads to contempt. Contempt leads to defensiveness. And defensiveness leads to stonewalling. And we're going to discuss all that. And you're going to learn from that. One leads to the other. And when these things happen, the apocalypse of the relationship begins. Let's talk about it. Today we're going to talk about criticism, specifically about criticism. And everyone has complaints about another person. These are just a sign of two distinct human beings having differences. It's fine to tell your partner that you don't like when they arrive an hour late for dinner, but when you load the complaint with an attack on her personality or character, like, what is it about your upbringing that makes you think it's all right to keep everybody waiting? That's a criticism, right? That's no longer I'm angry at you for being late. Couples begin to fall into criticism around their hot-button issues, but it's as though the conversations revolve relentlessly around phrases such as, you always or you never. You hear things when people are complaining about each other. You hear this phrase, you always blah, 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 and you never blah, 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 blah. You never consider me. You're always doing this. You're always, you're never, you're always, you're never. When you hear those words, my friends, if I could, I would make a sign for you. I would put it up as big as I can on your wall. When you hear the whines, you always, or you hear the whines, you, signs, you never, the words, you never, you can be sure. Criticism is on its pony, and it's taken its ride through your house, and this is the way it's working. Because you always and you never are definite signs of criticizing another human being. It's a signal. It's a sign. Let me help you out. Think about the last argument you had with someone you care about and answer these questions. I'll give you a group of 12 questions, and you answer with a yes or no. Right? And I'm going to read you 12 statements and see how many you could agree with. When you were in the middle of your last argument, question number one, did you think it was important to establish who was at fault? Now think about that. Was it important to establish who was at fault? If you're in an argument, is it important for you to point out whose fault this problem is? One way of having an argument with somebody, or one way of expressing your feelings with somebody, is to tell somebody what you feel. That doesn't necessarily mean it's their fault that you feel this way. But in that argument, was it important for you to get that person to understand that you are blaming them, it is their fault, and you're hoping that they will capitulate, that they will apologize? Of course, you're not going to forgive them even if they do. But so question number one, is it important to establish who is at fault? A little later, by the way, I'm going to be asking you to call in, and we'll talk about this. So you might want to write this down. The first one is establishing who's at fault. The second one is you're trying to see patterns and analyze your partner's personality as part of your complaint. We're going to talk about analysis of your partner. Were you analyzing your partner while you were complaining to them? Number three is you want to make a general point of just sticking to the one issue that you were dealing with. In other words, then you will kind of try to tell them all about the relationship. Here are the important points. Let's talk about the second one, analyzing your partner's personality. That's what you do when you're an amateur in therapy. You know, when you go into therapy for the first time, you learn a little bit about analysis. Now you take it and you bring it to your mate, and you're talking to your mate, and your mate says to you, you know, just like you do with your mother. And you start scolding your mate and bringing in some analysis of their personality. Yes, yes, you did that, but you know, you never confront anything because you're afraid of your own father. Boom, you're going in with the analysis. You ever do that? A lot of people do. Let's go to that second one, the general point. I mean, whenever you analyze somebody in the middle of an argument, what you're really trying to do is cut off their brain. You know, sometimes when you're fighting with an opponent, you want to kind of chop up their limbs. You don't want them to be able to walk, or you don't want them to be able to strike at you. In an argument where you use analysis as part of your weapon, you're trying to get their brain to be functionless. You're trying to reduce them to a child. The tendency to try to analyze somebody is one of the biggest misuses of understanding personality. And it doesn't work. It works the opposite of it. It engenders such hatred. Use it as a weapon, that's an attack. When your anger is rampant, you try to beat the partner into submission. It is when criticism plus analysis. Whew. The horseman's on the loose. You know what I mean? It's kicking up a lot of dirt. Or how about this one about the general point of not sticking to one issue? You get into an argument with somebody and you start hitting them with one thing and then you hit them with another. And you, instead of starting with just this one issue, you start telling a person you're angry with them for being late, and then they don't show any concern for your being and they neglect you in another way, and you tell them, why did you leave my clothing out? And while you're at it, you never take care of this and you don't take out the garbage. So you hit them from 5 or 6 or 7 different levels. And you hear yourself doing it. And they're trying to answer your question. They're trying to pay attention to you. But before they get one answer out, boom, you chop them with another one. It's fast fighting, you know? It's instead of martial arts, it's marital arts. You know, it's marital martial arts. You're just cutting away. A judo chop to the knees, and we'll do another one to the elbow here. Was he? You're about to answer that question about your right pinky? Let me hit your left pinky. So you hit him with everything you got, one at a time. So you generalize. And you're generalizing, and you're trying to make it so vague that the person can't answer. Did you ever do that to somebody? Everybody did. So generalizing is the third thing. The fourth one, when you were in an argument, do you remember never censoring your complaint at all? You let your partner have it the vicious way. You don't hold yourself back at all. You know, you feel the impulse to kind of hold back, and then you just let everything out. I see so many parents with children, and the child is crying, and the parent is about to, they look like they're going to hit the child, you know? They're threatening the child. Now, most often they won't hit the child in front of me because in my presence I'll do something about it. But they don't have their hand raised. But whether they hit the child or not, they're going to threaten this child with this hand. They're going to threaten the child with harm. That's the idea of it. The question becomes at the moment, do you make that decision with your mate when you're arguing with them? Are you going to let everything fly, or are you going to hold it back? If you're just going to let it fly emotionally and not think about the consequences, is that what you do? Number four, the no consequence, let it fly. Write that down. Number four, the no consequence, let it fly. Number five is when I was complaining, and this kind of goes along with it, I was completely out of control. It's just like you're just lost now. You're beside yourself. See, not only are you just attacking, but you're completely out of control too. And that you don't feel any need to gather yourself, to grab yourself, because you're in the middle of this argument. Here's number six. I didn't exactly make my point in a detached, even-handed way. I did not present my case in a detached, even kind of way. By your own judgment, you didn't step back when you tried to say something to the person and there wasn't a balance involved in it. You didn't present your argument well. You were just over the top, expressing your anger, criticizing the person, but there was no chance for that person really to respond. The assumption here is that you automatically get angry when you start arguing, and when you're disagreeing, you don't necessarily have to be angry. You could really be disagreeing without being angry, you know. But so, in other words, when you start trying to do, and you're dealing with a disagreement, sometimes you hold yourself back a little, and sometimes you present your case. And you say, hey, come on, let's talk about this over dinner. We have this big difference between us. I'd like to talk about it. You know, a lot of people choose a moment of intense anger to express or verbalize what they feel. And you decide to mention it when it comes right up to your nose. For example, you had your family invited over for dinner and your mate comes home late and you're furious. The anger is built. They kind of go together, but there's a way to say to yourself, I'm going to be angry. I don't want to bring it to my friend. I want to be able to bring it to my friend in some calm sort of way. I don't want to bring it when we're so much in love, but I don't want to bring it when the family is here. I'm going to deal with this later. And you find a way to deal with it later. But sometimes you just can't hold back. Are you somebody who just can't hold back? Number seven. When I get going, or when I got going, I brought up my partner's faults. Now, this is a little like the other ones, but at this point, when you're going and you're starting in your criticism, you start really chopping at them, and you start talking about their personality faults. You know, well, you're too, you don't spend enough time, you're not awake enough, you don't go to school, you haven't had the education, you're just not paying attention, you don't pay attention, your memory is gone, and you start bringing up their faults. You go into their soft spots. You go into the spots where they feel bad about themselves already. You know? Well, if you ever exercised, you would know what it was like to try to stand up and fight for yourself. But you never even exercise. You just, you know, and you just go after the soft spots. You go after where it hurts. The eighth one, my friends, and this is Armand DeMille, in case you just tuned in. We're talking about 12 statements here that you're going to agree or disagree with. They're going to talk about resentment, and this is a different form of criticism, and how criticism is built, as criticism is one of the four, what I consider the four horsemen of the apocalyptic relationship. Criticism being one, and this is just a focus on criticism. The eighth statement is, I resented having to mention it in the first place. Did you ever have that feeling of you resent even having to bring up, do you feel a kind of resentment about having to bring up what you don't like? Shouldn't the other person just bow to your way? Why do I have to bring it up? I want my mate to make a commitment to me, to the relationship. I want them to make it from them, not from me telling them. I don't want them to have to remember our anniversary. I want them to remember it automatically, you know? And I resent having to remind them. I resent having to tell them anything. Number 9, at the end of every argument, on some level, I regret my choice of tactless words. In other words, you begin to feel bad about the words you chose because some of your words were harmful. You said things that really hurt the other person. And 10 is, when I bring up a problem, I can't stop till my partner sees I'm right. I cannot stop, which usually means that you persist until your partner agrees with you, and that doesn't mean that they really see that you're right. They just have to look like they see that you're right because they get exhausted, they get depleted, and then they kind of look like they're agreeing with you on some level. But at some point, they may just get sick with the way that you're doing it, so they'll just capitulate at any moment. They'll give up. They'll stop hearing you. It's when the other horsemen come in. That's when they start stonewalling you. They give in to you, and they say, yeah, you're right, I should have locked the door, I should have come home early and give you that and again and that, but it leads to a building form of contempt. And it's also a way to do that, you know, it's the person begins to agree with you. And last, number 12, as I complained, someone unlocked an overwhelming tide of emotion in me, and what happened is you felt overwhelmed by emotion as you were talking about it. And you were talking about your, you know, the word overwhelm is kind of an interesting word. In nautical terms, when a ship is at the crest of a wave, it is whelmed. It's at the top of the wave. You know, it's really fine. It's whelming. That's not bad. It's nice to feel whelmed. Did you ever feel whelmed? Did you ever feel like a gush? You look at somebody you love and you can feel, I'm on the whelm of love, and you can feel yourself at the very top. It's beautiful. Overwhelmed is when, boom, you went over. Just a little too much input. Boom, and the ship went over. Overwhelmed is to be tipped over into the wave. When you're overwhelmed, then you don't know what to do. Then you're floundering. So here are the 12 questions again. Some of them, many of them are alike, but here they are. We're going to do them. And I want you to just check and think about them. I thought it was important to establish whose fault it was. In other words, I wanted them to understand it was their fault. Number 1. Number 2. I was trying to see the patterns and analyze my partner. I was analyzing my partner. That's number 2. Number 3. I wanted to make a general point, so I brought in a lot of issues all at once instead of just the one issue. Number 4. I didn't censor my complaints at all. I let my partner have it in a real vicious way. No consequences. I let it fly completely. Number 5, when I was complaining, I felt completely out of control. when I was complaining, it's just like I just got lost. Number six, I didn't exactly make my point in a detached, even-handed way. I felt myself really just not making my point, and it didn't matter. I just kept going anyway. Number seven, when I finally got going, I brought up my partner's personal faults, their personality flaws. Number eight, I resented having to bring up this stuff in the first place. I didn't want to have to bring it up. I didn't bring it up. I tried not to bring it up, and I just resented it. I don't want to do it because I want them to love me. I want them to give me what I want without even having to tell me. Number nine, as I think back of myself during that argument, I hated some of the words I used. I regretted my choice of tactless words. Especially true, my friends, when you think about the way that people shout at children. You know, I don't know what it is about children. I've got a big question about this. I was invited to a bris next week. You know, a bris is where they do the things to the child, and they do the circumcision without any anesthesia to a child who, the minute you cut into their parts with this pair of scissors, the child screams in bloody anger, and then everybody sits around and eats a bagel. Some piece of me says, I don't know, you know? We'll bring in now this baby boy wrapped in a swaddling, with this bandage around his penis, and for having been, just mutilated. And, I mean, maybe it's medically necessary or something like that for whatever reason, but no anesthesia, no nothing. We all laugh because we know the kid's got to scream because, what the hell, it's a little painful, but he'll get over it and let's have a bagel. You know? So when I think about some of the things that we do, in the words, as an act of love, I sometimes question. I question myself. I question the people around me. When I think of some of the words that people use with children, if they could be as thoughtless as to think that you could do a circumcision without anesthesia and then celebrate in a party afterwards with the baby present, you're going to have to teach me that one. You know, I don't get that one. You're going to have to teach it to me because I'm trying my best. But then I watch some of the words that people use with children when they're criticizing children and yelling at children. It's almost like you want to destroy the child's brain. It's almost like you can't hit the child with your fist because somebody's going to arrest you. So what you don't want to do is punch their brain with your fist and make their brain cry. Is that what you do? And I see people do that with children. Screaming at them to hurt them. I remember one patient who once came to see me who said to me, "Oh, my father, when he beat me, he was beating me to kill me. He wasn't beating me to punish me. He wanted me to die at that moment." So question number nine is the regretting and looking back and seeing that you were tactless and making the wrong words, using words that were really kind of harmful. Number 10, when I brought up a problem and I didn't stop till I just wouldn't stop, no matter what was happening, until my partner really agreed with me, until I beat my partner into submission is what you're really saying. Number 11, I used phrases like "you always" and "you never." I used phrases like that during the argument. And number 12, as I complained, something unlocked an overwhelming tide inside me of emotion inside me, and I just let it rip. I had to let it rip. I just couldn't control myself, and I just couldn't stop going. So listen, my friends, these are the 12 issues, and I'm going to ask you to call in after our break. We're going to take a short break. We're going to talk about criticism a little more, and then we're going to be taking your calls. Hey, this is Armand DeMille. We're talking about the four signs of a degenerating relationship, disintegrating relationship. The four signs are criticism, contempt, stonewalling. What's the fourth one? I thought so. See if you were listening. And when we get back, defensiveness and stonewalling. And when we get back, we're going to be taking your calls as well. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. Here's a little soft and gentle music for you from the many of you who have been in arguments with those you loved before, and you've just begged and begged and begged. And you said, listen, no matter how tough it's been between us, these words from Yuri Buenaventura, non me quite pa, which means please don't go.
Non me quite pa, il faut oublier, tout oublier, qui s'enfuit déjà. Oubliez les temps des malentendus et les temps perdus à savoir comment. Oubliez ces heures qui tuaient parfois à coup de pourquoi. Au cœur du bonheur, ne me quittez pas, ne me quittez pas, ne me quittez pas. Ne me quittez pas, moi je t'offrirai des perles de pluie, venues des pays où il ne pleut pas, le retard et la guerre jusqu'après ma mort, pour couvrir ton corps d'or et de lumière, je ferai promesse. Ne me quittez pas, je t'en compterai des mots engendrés que tu comprendras. Je te parlerai de ces amours-là qui ont vu de toi leur cœur s'embraser. Je te raconterai l'histoire de ces rois morts de n'avoir pas. Ne me quittez pas, ne me quittez pas, ne me quittez pas, ne me quittez pas. On a vu du vent, rejaillir le feu, c'est l'ancien grand temps qu'on croyait trop vieux. Il n'est pas possible de faire brûler.
Thank you.
Cowboy. Yuri Buenaventura. Non mi chiede pas, which, by the way, was originally written by Jacques Brel. Hey, Armand DeMille with you if you just tuned in and you thought we were a Spanish station. Well, Latin station playing Latin music, or French music. Well, in a way we are. WBAI 99.5, I am planning in May to have a special program on Latin depression. A couple of specialists are going to be coming by, a couple of books that were just offered to us. Somewhere during May, in the mid part of May, we'll be having some people who specialize in depression as it hits Latinas and Latinos specifically, and how that is different than other forms of depression. So that I want to take a look at. We're setting that up now with the help of our associates here. This is Armand DeMille. We are talking about relationships now, and we are talking about, this is a positive mind, in case you haven't tuned in a while, we've been here and not here. We haven't taken your calls for many weeks, so here's a chance, my friends. We've been in and out of the 9/11 hearings. Thank God for WBAI for broadcasting those fascinating things that we've been listening to. Thank God for WBAI. 212-209-2900 is the number here. What do you think of yourself during an argument? And now here's what we're talking about. We're talking about the four different, what I consider, apocalyptic measures of a relationship. It starts off with criticism. You criticize each other. You go from criticizing each other to contempt, the second step. Does your mate contempt you? I contempt you. Yeah, I contempt you too. Contempt. It's when it gets to be, you know, I'm not even going to tell you anymore. That's how much I dislike you. And then that goes on to defensiveness, which we're also going to talk about. We're going to talk about contempt tomorrow. And then we're going to talk about defensiveness, and then we're going to talk about stonewalling. These four items, which, my friend, if you can grab a hold of these, and you see these appearing in your life, you can hear these four horsemen as they kind of gather through your life, and maybe catch them in enough time so that you don't destroy yourself and yourself in that relationship that you're in as well. 212-209-2900. Haven't spoken to you for a while. Let's hear some of your responses. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jim. I'm sorry, I'm just turning down the radio.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for waiting.
You have a great show.
Thank you.
So my question is, you've actually described the process very well in a lot of ways. So what do you do? I mean, you know, how do you heal this?
Well, you mean how does Jim heal this?
Right.
Where did you get stuck, Jim? Tell me about you.
Well, you know, I have what I consider a very, you know, ferocious temper, and, you know, I do a lot of the things that you described in terms of insisting that people agree and not censoring my words and things like that. And I think there is a lot of resentment building up in my relationship.
You can be mean.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Sure.
I can be mean. That's what I think I always heard whenever I heard Beethoven's Fifth. Try it out. I can be mean.
You want me to say
that?
Yeah,
I want you to do that.
I can be mean.
All right, now I'm going to do the other part, right? I can be mean. Go ahead now. You pick it up.
I can be mean.
I can be mean. I can be mean. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, come on, we'll play.
More than I've sung in a while.
I can be mean. I can be mean. Now, just once, I want you to do this with vibrato, right? I want you to take those first five words, I can be, first four words, those first four notes, and give it to me with everything you got. I can be mean. Go ahead, do it.
I can be mean.
Isn't that beautiful?
Very good.
Now, I want you to keep this. I want you to keep this as your own mantra. This is your mantra. This is for you to know. You see, you don't have to tell other people this. But it's Jim it is, right?
Yep.
It's for Jim to be aware that Jim can be mean, and not only can be mean, is well equipped to dismember other people emotionally, if necessary, when he gets into a battle, because he can be mean, because you've got the fighting stuff. Because you get to the point where you get so mean that you just can't stop yourself and you let it fly. And it happens. And somebody bigger than you, somebody like me, you know, would meet you and you'd be mean with me and I'd probably hug you. You know, because I wouldn't take it personally. Because I'd look and I'd say, oh, you're being mean with me? Come here. Just like I would with any kid. And probably if some little kid was being mean with you, you, Jim, would hug them. Because you wouldn't be threatened by them. But somewhere along the line, Jim, this thing is going to happen to you, which has never happened. Are you ready for it? You have never trusted anyone. And that's where we got to break it. Who's the last person you trusted?
Nobody. Well, my father, I guess.
Last one, right?
Yep.
What happened to him?
Oh, he's still around.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the problem. If you only trusted your father and you never trusted anyone else, that's the way this is coming out. So you got to find somewhere else, some other way of melting into finding that trust in your heart for some other human. Now you try to form a relationship, you know, with a man or a woman, and you try to say to them, okay, I'm going to try to trust you, you know, I'm not going to fight with you, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to be so critical, I'm not going to be so harsh, and this bug keeps coming up inside of you just ready to destroy. And it becomes very difficult because I can be mean, you know, Beethoven rears its head. So I would say for someone like you, what you've got to do is find some kind of a therapy where you're going to feel like you're with somebody of some kind of power who can help you actually look at it person to person. And somebody you respect, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hard to come by for you.
That's hard.
I know, I understand. I understand. Because you're alone. And the thing that your anger and your resentment does for you is it keeps you alone. And it keeps you convinced that the only place you should be is alone. The only safe place to be.
Very good.
Very good.
Oh, thank you.
My pleasure, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're talking about trying to find that little thing in your life that helps you melt a little bit. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good.
Good. My name's Kathy. I'm calling from Westchester.
Hello, Kathy.
I'm so happy that I got on today to speak with you because both my husband and I are feeling very sad and acknowledging with each other that we really need to get some help because I can really relate to those four, you know, things that you're talking about. And, you know, we're really in a place where we realize that if we don't get some help, you know, we're very far apart, and, you know, we're very concerned about it.
And you're giving up on each other, you're kind of concerned, you're saying, you know, here we are, do you have any children?
Well, I don't think we're giving up on each other, and it's sort of, you know, funny, because on the other hand, even though we're at that point of desperation, on the other hand, we've been together for 11 years, so on the other hand, we've also, you know, managed to get through our, you know, whatever, disgruntlements with each other and so forth. And we do have kids. We have two kids, young kids, 5 and 7. So that's a big bond that keeps us together. And, you know, we don't want to, you know, do anything. I don't want to, you know, leave my husband. He doesn't want to leave me. I really believe that. But we just, you know, so far down the line, because for years we've kind of let things deteriorate in our relationship, you know. And I definitely am the type that, I mean, I could tell you different things, like jotted down some things with the criticism that we do to each other. But I don't know if I even want to do that.
Yeah, tell me.
Well, I think the way I would describe it is that I'm aggressive-aggressive and my husband is passive-aggressive. That's my perspective, you know. And that's hard because, you know, I experience his passive-aggressivity. You know, things he might have said, like, you know, no matter what small thing I might ask him to do, he'll never do it, you know. And some of them may be stupid things, but when it accumulates, you know, all the time. It's like I feel very uncared about and, you know, disregarded in a way, and, you know, sort of like just taken for granted a bit, you know, because I am a wonderful mother, you know, and I'm really there for my kids. And, you know, he is there for his kids, too. But so that's something that I have a hard time with, and I really don't feel...
Well, Kathy, back up just a minute, okay?
Okay.
When did you lose... It sounds like you've got your friendship, but it sounds like you lost your romance.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
And when, you know, when did... Wait, slow down a second.
I'm sorry.
When did the romance go?
Well, I think that it was, you know, pretty early on after we got married, because for one thing, like, we're older. I'm 48, my husband's 50, and we also really... We got together later in life. Like, I was 36, 37, and he's, you know, a year older than I. And then we wanted to have children very much, and I was at that age where, you know... You're, if you want to have children, you've really got to try to have them. And we went through some infertility troubles, you know, trying to get pregnant on our own. And then I went through in vitro fertilization and had two children, you know, through in vitro. So it was very hard, you know, and I worked full time.
So what happened was, during this entire period of time, the
two
of you as a couple put the stress of creating... Got there, and you went from the romantic, natural path, or wherever you were, into a kind of successful, unnatural path of becoming kind of mechanical. So now the two of you are looking at each other, and we say, good job, we got the kids, we got the house, we got everything, we got each other. Maybe we can have some fun. Maybe we can have a little dance, you know? Maybe we need a little transplant here. Maybe we need to do something different. And he's kind of willing to do it, and you're willing to do it. And where do you guys live?
Well, they live in Hartsdale, and I really would like to, you know, get a referral, or if you want me to call your office or whatever, but...
Call my office. What probably would be best is for you to come down one time.
Okay.
You know, and to take a look, because sometimes I tell you, I don't think therapy is always the answer. I think therapy is a good way to keep therapists in business, but I think sometimes a vacation, a holiday, a plan, a special room that is just for the two of you, something that is an investment.
Yes.
That is an investment in a different part of your relationship may be the answer. Call my office, 212-757-4488.
Okay, thanks
a
lot.
And we'll take a closer look. I really appreciate it, too.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, Armand. Thank you so much. And I feel like, you know, you get everything, and I get a lot of stuff. And I feel like you're a real, you know, link for me and an anchor for me, I'm telling you. And I listen to your show very often.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Time for a couple more calls. Let's take them today. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, let me turn off my radio. I didn't think I'd get through.
You did.
This is hitting home with me with a relationship that I'm having for about 2 years. Been seeing somebody who is volatile and also just doesn't seem to know how to be in a relationship. He can just fly off the handle, even just while we're making plans to have a date. And it confuses me quite a bit. And he also does some kind of strange things that I kind of overlook.
Let me ask you something. Do you come from a family where alcoholism was present in your parents?
No.
Neither one of your parents?
No.
What was the illness in your family?
Well, actually, I didn't find out till as an adult that my oldest brother was schizophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was volatile.
Yes, he was.
And he was very volatile. And you grew up with him?
Kind of. Mostly when I was small, he went into the Air Force.
Hmm. What's your name?
Jane.
Jane, okay, Jane. So, Jane, you've chosen to be with somebody who is unpredictable, at times irrational, and sometimes just wildly passionate in the way he expresses himself, volatile, right?
Yes, and not able to, he really violates, I mean, not that I don't myself, but I think he has violated a lot of what you're saying, this checklist.
Yeah, absolutely. He's out of control and he's out of... So it would only seem natural to me that if you were calling me from the way that you're presenting it, you're saying, I'm with this guy who's a wild man and I've chosen him and he treats me badly. But here's what I want you to tell me. I want you to tell me what is great about this guy, because you sound like a very intelligent person who is selecting things for very good reasons, and you appreciate beauty. I know you love beauty. What is the beauty in this man?
He's beautiful, and...
Beautiful how?
I don't know. He has pretty hair. He can be very loving, and he's helped me out with getting work.
So he's a very giving and a very deep kind of guy. I mean, he kind of goes out to the ranges, goes out to the edges of emotions, and is he very loving with you? Do you have a good relationship with him?
Well, in that way, yes, but then he'll turn on me, and then I just trust him. I feel emotionally battered. I mean, it crossed my mind to call the police on him one time.
Sure.
And, I don't feel, I've never really felt very comfortable around him. As a result, I don't see him much.
I knew a man who once had a Doberman Pinscher. Mm-hmm. He had this Doberman Pinscher because his neighbor had a Doberman Pinscher, and this dog would bite people.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, wait a minute, that dog... He's a good dog. I don't want you to give that dog up. I'm going to take that dog. And so he took this Doberman Pinscher, and every now and then the dog would bite him.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog would bite him, and he would go around, and he would keep this dog. And the dog, of course, had to be muzzled
mm-hmm.
because he didn't want the dog to bite anybody else. And every now and then this man had a pet dog who would occasionally bite him, snarl and snap at him. And when I asked him why he kept the dog, he said, because I love him, because he's my dog, because there's something about him that makes him very special in the way that he is uncontrollable. And I'm suggesting to you, Jane, that there is something about his uncontrollable self that you like. Because what you're doing is you're fishing with me to find out from me to help me get rid of him. You see, you're kind of saying to me, oh, look at what this guy does to me. And I'm saying, oh, wait a minute, this is your Doberman. This is a man you've chosen to be with. So I'm saying there's something about his irrationality that is appealing to you, and what you've got to do is you've got to figure out what the appeal is about his crazy, erratic self.
I've got to say that there is no appeal.
I mean,
drain a lot of my energy.
Yeah, I know. So that maybe that's the point. Maybe you want somebody who will drain a lot of your energy. You know, maybe it's just somebody who keeps you on the ground in that way. And I know you're saying there is no appeal,
mm-hmm.
but I've got a suspicion that there is something very attractive to this for you. Have you been good at expressing your anger during your life?
Not all my life. And I've had to kind of learn that. And I think I've done very well with him in terms of backing off, making I statements, those kinds of things. But he'll lie. He'll turn the tables on me and say, well, you do it to me. You know, if I say you always break plans, he'll say, well, you always break plans, which I don't.
So he's completely uncontrollable, huh?
Yeah.
On any level, is it fun to be with somebody who you can't control?
No, not really. I mean, not really fun.
Yeah, not fun.
I mean, not trusting. I don't trust him.
I know. I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand. But you see, these dramas that we choose, oh, and I've got to be going, I'm sorry to say, these dramas that we get involved in, they have a reason underneath them. And sometimes when it's so obvious that you shouldn't be there, one of the things you're going to find is that there's a real reason that you're there. And it's probably the very reason you're objecting to. Hey, we'll take a closer look tomorrow, by the way. Be sure to tune in. I'll continue along with this. This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind. Thank you for being here, my friend. If you want a copy of today's program, the telephone number is 1-800-575-0580. That's 1-800-575-0580. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friend.
Thank you very much, Armand DeMille. The Positive Mind. You are tuned to listen to supported commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York.
Why you don't be that
57 degrees
and Good afternoon. Here are some news headlines for this hour. A local news report yesterday that a new study has found high rates of depression and anxiety among firefighters involved in the rescue and recovery efforts following the World Trade Center attack.